There's this mawkish old Virilin song that goes, "There'll always be an England." Ed, would you like to do a rendition?
There'll always be an England. An England,
okay, I think that's enough. Thank you.
Shall
thanks.
Be free.
Yep, thanks. Thanks.
This song, England...
God's sake. This song came out at the end of World War II, so it probably captures the national relief at coming through the war sort of intact. The only problem with the song, of course, and I've got bad news here, is that there won't always be an England.
What?
And while you might be saying, well, duh, it's actually very easy to forget that this nationality thing we cling to is often a flash in the pan. Scotland, in some form, didn't happen until the 9th century, England the 10th century, Wales the 11th century, Ireland maybe the 12th century, and all these dates of formation are highly debatable. Nations and national identity is an evolving thing. We look back to make some sense of what we have now, but that can mean that we're reading history backwards.
The definition of hindsight is looking through your legs backwards.
We think of how things are now as so inevitable that we mould history into a linear arrow pointing to where we are, but that's not how history works. The point is that the history of the British and Irish Isles has always been one of change, of people coming and going, of impermanence. Today we're going to talk about a kingdom in modern-day England and Scotland which was neither English nor Scottish. It was created before those ideas even existed. It was created by the people of the Old North who were around before England, Scotland, even before the Romans. Today we're talking about one of the last great kingdoms of the ancient Britons. Alt Clut, the Rock of the Clyde.
And how it became the Kingdom of Strathclyde?
Well, yeah, that too, Ed, but I wanted to end on Rock of the Clyde because it sounded really cool.
Oh, sorry.
What?
Countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist anymore.
Where was Alt Clut?
Alt Clut covered most of the southwest quarter of modern Scotland that today encompasses major cities such as Glasgow, Kilmarnock and Ayr. But its ancient capital was Dunbarton. This is an anglicised form of Dunbritann, Castle of the Britons. They were the ancient Britons, the same people that the Romans discovered when they first landed in Britain in 55 BC. But after the Anglo-Saxons migrated to Britain, the ancient Britons as independent people survived in three major locations, Wales, Cornwall, and the Old North. They now only survive in Wales, but that's not to say that most English people aren't riddled with ancient Britain DNA. We're saturated with the stuff. But what's a people without culture, language, and heritage, after all? And that's what the people of the Clyde had, their own unique identity. The kings and people of Alt Clut spoke the ancient language of the Britons, Brythonic.
Brythonic?
Brythonic was, and in some cases still is, spoken in Cornwall, Wales, the Old North, and Breton, or Brittany, in France. It's the language that modern Welsh evolved from. Instead of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the population of Alt Clut would have said
Yinty, tinty, tethery, methery, ban.
And in modern Welsh they say
In, die, tri, pedwar, pimp.
And that dramatic reading was by legendary guitarist and real Welsh man, Buster Crofton, so follow him on Instagram. The early medieval English historian Bede, who we had met in our episodes on Mercia and the Sultanate of Rum briefly, wrote about a fortified city called Alt Clut, the Rock on the Clyde. How metal is that?
Good evening, we are Rock of Clyde, Yinty, Tinty, Teffery, Meffery.
It was also known as the Kingdom of the Rock.
Researching.
We know Alt Clut existed from archaeology, linguistics, king's lists, poetry, and chronicles. Alt Clut, or the Kingdom of the Rock, was one of the last kingdoms to succumb to invaders. It also helped stop the Anglo-Saxon march north in its tracks. Could the legendary King Arthur have been based on Brythonic King of Alt Clut? Find out by listening right to the end of this episode, following us on social media and giving us a 5-star review.
Pathetic.
Is it?
After all, Altclut was surrounded by enemies on all sides. The Scots to the west, the Picts to the north, the Angles to the east and the south.
When was the kingdom of Altclut?
From the 5th century to about 1030 AD, except it starts as Altclut and then becomes the kingdom of Strathclyde when it loses the rock bit and is more controlled by the kingdom of Alba, which eventually became known as Scotland, which you might have heard of, but we'll come to that later. Its beginnings are shadowy. When the Romans retreated from Britain in the late 4th century, several native kingdoms popped up north of Hadrian's Wall. The first ruler of the Kingdom of the Rock was Caroticus, a Romanized version of Caredic Gulweldic. His claim to fame? St. Patrick complained that Caroticus and his gangsters sold Christians into slavery to the Picts and Scots. He is referred to in the Welsh annals as Caredic the Wealthy, son of Kinlop. Slavery really pays, it seems. He supposedly had his successors, Erbin, Kinwit, Geraint, Tutugal and Cor, but we don't know much about them. Sorry, except Tutugal. We think he may have reigned from 560 to 580, and that's because he had a more famous son, Riderch Hael, who had a long reign from 580 to 618 AD. Probably. Maybe. We don't know. Just as we know Caroticus from the accounts of St. Patrick, we also know of King Riderch Hael from St. Columba. In 590, he joined a confederacy of Celtic kings and invaded south to wipe the Anglo-Saxon kingdom of Bernicia from the map. Apparently, they very nearly succeeded, but infighting led to the assassination of their leader, and the Confederacy fell apart.
Rock of the Clyde, you probably were involved in regicide. Oh, why did you do it? Oh, Rock of the Clyde.
Do you remember the Viking Kingdom of Dublin, Ed?
I do.
And do you remember how rival kings were constantly screwing each other over? Same here.
Listen to Viking Kingdom of Dublin Season 3 Episode 2 of Countries That Don't Exist Anymore. Now!
Pathetic.
Is it?
And there are some cool but bizarre stories about him elsewhere too. Popular medieval holy man St. Mungo is said to have had various dealings with Riderch Hael. And here's a little song I put together about it. I wrote the words because Ed was away. In the dark age times when the weather was cold, and he never got bold, you got Strathclyde, you got Strathclyde, you got Strathclyde.
You know, Phil, you don't have to do a song for everything.
Oh, don't I?
No.
After knocking around with St. David, the patron saint of Wales, as you might know, Mungo was summoned to the Kingdom of the Rock, where he apparently got the title of Bishop of North Britain in 580 to found a church at the Blue Green Meadow, aka Glasgow.
Glasgow. And that's why that's called that.
His adventures there are still commemorated by the symbol of Glasgow, a bird, a tree, a bell, and a fish, all relating to the miracles of St. Mungo. A bird that he restored to life, a tree that he gave the ability to set itself on fire whenever it fancied, very useful. The bell represents his pilgrimage to Rome. I guess long-distance tourism was a bit of a miracle in the Dark Ages.
The fish?
Ah, now that relates to King Riderch Hael. Apparently, his wife Langoreth was having it away with a soldier and foolishly gave him the ring that her husband had given to her.
Ah, the perils of regifting.
Oh yeah. When the king saw the soldier was wearing the ring, he flew into a temper and had his wife thrown into a dungeon and the soldier sentenced to death. He then seized the ring and threw it into the waters of the Clyde. The queen sought the advice of St. Mungo, who sent a fisherman out to do some fishing. Catching a salmon, the fisherman handed it to St. Mungo, who had it cut open, and there inside was the ring. This miracle impressed King Riderch so much that he forgave his wife and the soldier.
Right, so he was actually fine with the affair all along. What really annoyed him was chucking a ring into the water.
which he specifically requested in the first place.
Oh, by the way, the Salmon and the Ring story was also recycled for Lancelot and Guinevere in the court of King Arthur. So there's another piece of evidence for the Arthurian legend taking place on the Clyde.
I mean, you've got the fish, you've got the ring. What more evidence do you possibly need?
None. And everything ended relatively happy ever after for Riddurch. In fact, St. Columba prophesies that he would die in bed. And that's what happened. Spooky. I mean, how could he have known?
To be honest, though, as far as prophecies go, it's not that impressive. You know, if he's like, and I say unto you that tomorrow morning as the hour strikes 7:30, you will break fast, possibly with the eating of wheat that has been shredded asunder. Or Cocoa Pops.
I mean, if he gets Cocoa Pops, then I think that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, that's a bit of a miracle. That'd be a trading miracle for the time, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. The important thing is that he's name-checked by a saint and recorded by monks. So, Riddurch Hale, probably a real king of Altklut. And the successors of Riddurch Hale, a buttload of princes called Dumnagal, apparently. At least 5 of them. But no dates, no details, not even a friends reunited profile between them.
What was the religion of Altklut?
Despite the complaints of St. Patrick, it was Christianity. Altklut's war against the Angles was less about the English taking our freedom and more about the Roman Catholicism that the Angles had adopted. See, Celtic Christianity had grown independently of the church in Rome, and now that things had settled down a bit, they were none too pleased about Rome sending new missionaries to convert the pagans. And by pagans, of course, I mean other Christians. St. Wilfrid was named Bishop of Pictland, which was a tad optimistic since he couldn't get anywhere near it. The Roman Catholic Church were even goading the Anglo-Saxons to push north and spread Catholic orthodoxy. Nothing spreads the religion of peace like good old-fashioned violence. But let's lay off religion for just a second. Yes, the Celtic and Catholic churches disagreed about how Easter was calculated and what colour candle was best, but at the heart of all this, religious differences were often just a nice-sounding excuse for a power grab.
Yes, the two go hand in hand.
Despite Rome's backing of the Angle advance, Altklut, along with their Pictish allies, held off the Anglo-Saxon steamroller by defeating the Northumbrian king Ecgtryth at the Battle of Nectansmere in 685. One of the reasons we know this is that the Picts carved the Abellemno stone commemorating the victory. In the final carving, Ecgtryth lies dead on the battlefield, birds picking out his gizzards.
No mobile phones, no internet, just people living in the moment.
So the rock stood. While Riddurch Hale didn't appear to have any sons, there seems to be a regular string of kings, some overlapping with kings of Pictland. But this was no Pictish takeover. In fact, we think that it was Altklut that were providing kings for the Picts. During the 7th century, the rock was the powerhouse. After Riddurch Hale came Nathan. Nathan and his line not only held power at home, but were unafraid to venture out and give the other nearby powers a good drubbing on occasion. Then Nathan begat Beli, and Beli begat Owen, and it was Owen who killed Domnall Brech, king of Dalriada, at the Battle of Strathcaron in 642.
Where was Dalriada?
Dalriada was a Gaelic kingdom that covered the west coast of Scotland and a corner of Northern Ireland.
So the Irish were, in fact, Scottish?
Well, in fact, the Scots were from Ireland. On the whole, it's best not to think about Scotland and Ireland or England or any of these countries at this point. The two islands we now call Britain and Ireland were just one big battleground populated by various competing peoples. But what goes up must come down. During the 8th and early 9th centuries, the rock goes quiet. No famous monarchs, no resounding victories. And while the once warring Picts and Scots eventually allied and intermarried, Altklut seems to have been in some kind of lockdown. Or at least, that's what the historical records tell us. Or don't tell us. Kind of the same thing. Maybe during this time, Altklut became a touring BG tribute act. We don't know, because the records don't exist. But one of the reasons why we hear less from the rock was that they were surrounded by more powerful nations. To the south were the Angles of Northumbria. And yes, while Altklut had stopped Northumbria's northward expansion, the Angles still ruled prosperous lands that encompassed northern England and southern Scotland. and surrounding them on pretty much every other side were the United Scots and Picts, who seemed to be doing well for themselves, actively trading and settlement building. Meanwhile, evidence of Alclut's prosperity is a lot more scarce. But in 750 AD, we have it from several accounts that Alclut went to war with the Picts, killing Tallaghan, king of the Picts, before losing their own king, Toidabur Map Bailey. The map bit, by the way, means son of. Speaking of sons of, there seems to have been a bit of a dynastic strife in Alclut. Initially, the throne was gained by Dinfal Mat Toidabur. No guesses who he was map of.
King Arthur?
I said no guesses.
Oh, sorry.
But then Dinfal met his Dinfal downfall when the rock was invaded by an alliance of Picts and Angles in 756. King Dinfal surrendered his throne to Unwist, king of the Picts, and Edbert, king of Northumbria. Bad news for Alclut, but bad news for Edbert too, as on his way home he was ambushed and killed by his former ally, Pictish king Unwist. What a wanker.
Unwist, more like King Onanist. Am I right?
Nice one, Ed. Shockingly, given the reliability of sources from this time, we're not 100% sure that Onwist was the perpetrator, but he seems the only person in the area with the strength to do it. His motive could well have been not wanting to share the Alclut kingship with Edbert, and the Northumbrian Bede suspected as much, calling Onwist a
tyrannical butcher,
and the Scots-Picts alliance was becoming an increasing threat. Partly because they were merging into one solid mass.
Yeah, one really carb-heavy, deep-fried mass that's really hard to squeeze out.
The Scots had illiterate clergy who were busy converting the Picts to their liturgy. And at the same time, we have evidence of the Scots migrating from the western seaboard throughout the land. Very Scots-sounding areas were popping up further east, like Athol or New Ireland. Their monarchies were intermarrying and their capital was founded at Dunkeld.
Not Edinburgh?
No, Edinburgh was an Anglo-Saxon settlement.
Phil, you get us into trouble with the SNP.
Oh, shit. And at the nearby Abbey of Scone was housed the Stone of Scone, the sacred coronation stone of Scotland.
Ah, the Stone of Scone. Personally, I like coronation first, then jam, then cream.
Cream, then jam?
Blasphemer!
Heretic!
It's jam first!
No, it's
jam,
cream.
Not cream.
It's cream first.
And lo, the Jaminians wage war against the Criminians for 1,000 generations thereafter, until all their armies were scone.
And that's how war starts.
It really is that easy. Of course, this merger wasn't without its own civil wars, until Kenneth MacAlpine became, sort of, the first Scottish king in 843, and sometime thereafter, this new kingdom got the Gaelic name of Alba, and adopted the patron Saint Andrew, as well as his flag, the Saltaire, which Scotland still has to this day. So, Scotland is formed, sort of, a bit. The reason that Kenneth MacAlpine got to take over the north of the island was that the good old Vikings rolled in and wiped out all the other contenders, classic Vikings. And what was good news for King Ken was really bad news for Alclut. From their base in Dublin...
Listen to our episode on the Viking Kingdom of Dublin for more.
The Vikings were wreaking havoc wherever they swung their axes. In either 870 or 871, they swept in and destroyed the Fortress of the Rock. According to the Annals of Ulster, friends of the podcast Olaf and Ivar besieged the rock for 4 months before plundering it and destroying it and killing its king, Arthgal. Kenneth MacAlpine's son, King Constantine, then invaded and made himself over-king, with Run Map Arthgal serving under him. The ruling elite of Alclut mainly seem to have been exiled and fled to their brethren in Wales. The Britons left behind were needed to work on the land and were absorbed into the new kingdom of Strathclyde. The capital of Strathclyde was moved away from the now smouldering rock to Govan, now a suburb of Glasgow.
And a shit one, according to my girlfriend.
Not necessarily the views of CTDEA or its shareholders. The once mighty Alclut was now Strathclyde, more of a tribute state to Alba.
So why was it rebranded as Strathclyde?
Whereas Outclut was a Brythonic name meaning Rock of the Clyde, Strathclwaith was a Gaelic name meaning Valley of the Clyde. So, demotion from a mighty rock peaking up to a geographical valley pointing down.
Yeah, sort of how Great Britain went from Great Britain to Great Britain.
Exactly. But it seems like there was nearly a moment of rejuvenation for old Outclut. As grandson of Kenneth MacAlpine, Earchaid Mac Ruin became King of Strathclyde and maybe even King of Alba. One source called him
the first Briton to rule over the Gaels.
But it didn't last long as he was booted out by Giric MacRath, who sounds super dangerous and was known to have had Britons, Norse and English house slaves.
God damn it, MacRath! You may have defeated the King of the Gaels, but you can't keep Britain, Norse and English house slaves.
But Chief, I really like having slaves.
MacRath, in this department we do things by the illuminated manuscript.
Illuminate this.
Oh, I get it. You set me on fire after I said illuminated. I burn!
And you can listen to more episodes of MacRath on our Patreon bonus episodes.
Probably. Maybe. Maybe not.
Maybe we won't get around to it. I don't know. Buy us a coffee. Maybe. Yeah, buy us a coffee. Yeah.
Buy us a coffee. But Strathclyde would have to learn to get on with their quote-unquote Scottish overlords because there was a new threat to the south. This time, not the Vikings, but a newly minted nation that was kicking Viking butt. The English.
Run! It's those accursed English.
But we're English.
Oh, yeah.
Go English.
Go English. While King Alfred had been reduced to hiding in swamps, he famously led the fight back, with his children pushing the Norsemen back further north.
For more, listen to our episode on Mercia.
By the time of Alfred's grandson, England had greater ambitions. King Athelstan had ideas of uniting all the island of Britain under his rule. And in a meeting at Aidmont Bridge in Cumbria, all the bigwigs of Britain submitted to Athelstan, which included Owen Map Dinfal of Strathclyde. New coins were minted proclaiming Athelstan Rex Totius Britanniae. More bad news for Strathclyde? Not quite. Since Athelstan had smashed the Vikings of Northumbria and York, this led to a power vacuum in the area. And with England occupied down south, this gave Strathclyde the opportunity to sneakily slide into those territories, moving deep into the Pennines. Probably up to about the modern town of Barnard Castle, where Dominic Cummings also sneakily slid.
Hey Phil, 2020 cool. It wants its topical comedy back.
Yeah, well, I like to look back to that coming story with 2020 vision. Anyway, the lands of the Old North were back. Sort of. A bit. And markers of Strathclyde's rule in the north of England are still evident today, like the Cumbrian parish churches dedicated to St Mungo at Dereham near Cockermouth. In fact, the kings of Strathclyde were also known as kings of Cumbria. Cumbria just means compatriots, and is similar to the Welsh word for Wales, Cymru.
See, Cymru makes total sense to me. That's what we should call it. That's what Welsh people should call it. Because why would Wales call itself Wales? Wales just means foreigners. They're calling themselves foreigners.
Oh, shut up, my fellow foreigner. There are a smattering of places with Brythonic place names in Cumbria. Perhaps most notably, Dumnail Reis was probably named after Difnal ab Owen, King of Strathclyde. But this newfound glory, sort of, didn't last long. While all the other kingdoms of Britain had submitted to Æthelstan, turns out that they all had their fingers crossed behind their backs and didn't really mean it. And at the Battle of Brunanburh, near modern Merseyside, a coalition of Welsh, Scots and Norse kings faced the English in 937. Probably among them was the King of Strathclyde, Owen Map Dunfall. Unfortunately for Owen, he was on the losing side. But this wasn't game over for Strathclyde. In fact, Athelstan's death gave them a reprieve, as it was down to his successor, Edmund the Elder, to invade Strathclyde in 944, defeating its king, Dinfal III. Yet another Dinfal downfall. In the settlement, Outclut was mentioned by name, but only in as much as it was decided that its semi-independence should reach an end and it should be totally absorbed into Alba. That's not to say that all this Brythonic identity was lost in the area. Its rulers kept Brythonic names, but it was now acting under direct orders from Alba. In the south, it was England's turn to come under the heels of invaders, first by King Canute of Norway, and then by William the Conqueror, who set about harrying the north and pestering the Scots. William the Conqueror, not just a name. The title King of Alba was dropped and the more recognisable Rex Scotorum, or King of Scotland, was assumed. These new Scottish kings created what we think of as Scotland with the conquering of Edinburgh in 1020. Scottish nobles were now very non-Gaelic lowlanders with strong English and Norman connections. With almost nothing to do with the Highlander blue Pictish war paint popularised by Braveheart.
Braveheart? Not historically accurate. Plot twist.
Shocked as you are. Shocked as you are. Even William Wallace may not have been particularly Scottish. Wallace, or Ulas in Gaelic, means Welshman or Briton. But given that he was born and grew up in the site of the rock, it's probably not all that surprising. Within Strathclyde, its Brythonic language and identity continued. In the 12th century, when Scotland's clans were forming, many pointed back to Brythonic ancestry. Clan Gelbraith's name in Gaelic means foreign Briton. They took the symbol of the boar's head, the same as in the last kings of Strathclyde. Similarly, the Kincaids, MacArthurs, and the Lennoxes made much of their connections back to the Kingdom of the Rock. The surname Campbell comes from the Gaelic word meaning Cambail, or twisted mouth, i.e. unintelligible. And from where they originated, this also is likely to mean that they were originally Brythonic speakers with an accent that sounded strange to Gaelic ears. One of the last major mentions of Altclut was when Scottish King David I patronised the cult of St Mungo in Glasgow in 1136. The Brythonic language didn't last past the 13th century. Ironically, parts of Glasgow and the Clydesdale now have a strong Gaelic identity, but this only started during the Industrial Revolution when penniless Gaelic migrants moved to the shipyards of the Clyde to build the British Empire's ocean-going fleet. But this should not be a surprise. While we love to stick to a national myth, hopefully, Countries That Don't Exist Anymore has reminded you that nationalities and identities come and go and ebb and flow and evolve and merge and adapt. But do they really ever go away? Thanks to Scottish emigration, there are Dumbartons all over the world, in Canada, in New Zealand, two in Australia, and loads in the USA. If the legacy of a people is its names, then Altclut went global.
When the Saxons landed on the British Isle, it looked as if the Britons had finally had their D. But the Britons built a fort upon the Clyde. You shall not pass, we'll never go away. And they defeated the Angles in a mighty war, like King Arthur and his knights, but for real. And Clyde Rock survived for many centuries more, and the people kept their Brythonic spiel. And they built a fort under Clyde, and that fort stood for some years more, to keep the ancient Brits alive. And this is what this history's for. Altclut, Strathclyde, Altclut, Strathclyde. On that windswept rock they finally made their stand. Yitty-dinty, yitty-dinty, yitty-dinty,
yitty-dinty. Bamf. Hi listeners, thanks for tuning into this episode on the Ancient Kingdom, or was it, of Altclut. You might have noticed a slight change in the normal order. We didn't have a side episode on the Ukraine. That's because we're waiting for an extra special guest, so we're going to slightly rejig things. Hope you don't mind, but I think it's going to be worth the wait. As ever, of course, you can follow us at CTDEAPod on all the socials, except for Instagram, and go to our website, ctdeapod.com, where you'll find loads of amazing articles and all sorts of extra nuggets of loveliness. So whichever episode is happening next time, I don't really know, join us then on...
Countries that don't exist anymore. They used to exist, but not anymore. Now you know what this podcast is for. It's countries that don't exist anymore.